podcast. Skillet Keller official.com.
Instagram UK frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Big shout to our friends Graffiti Kings.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Killer Keller podcast. Serves you right. Coming to you live and direct from central London, or as central as you need to be. This is a subscription-based business, so do not sleep, I repeat. Do not sleep on my repeat. Get subscribing, sharing, and all that love and all that good stuff. We are inside the ride, and it's by popular demand, man. You've been highly noted on the comments of get teaching. So, without further ado,
finally,
allow me to introduce to you DDS Finest, the mighty motherfucking teach inside the building. What are you saying?
All good, man. All good.
You've been staying out of trouble?
Yeah, always. I'm never in trouble anymore.
What's been happening, G? What's been going on?
Just getting on with life, you know, trying to do other things, working, you know, getting along with things.
Getting
along
with it, yeah. It's funny, isn't it, that you get a rhythm of what you're at and what you're doing, and, you know, I mean, judging by the wrinkles upon this PC, I mean, you're an age.
I should go and get some Dove or something.
Some Dove and some Timotei.
Yeah.
Some hot get up there you got there, brother. So we ain't going to be burning you for too long on this one. Let's get deep into the archives if we can. Now, I know this is like a lot of reciting and memory for you, but this is what the people have asked for, so we are going to have to jump straight into it.
I remember.
Let's start from the beginning. A young teach. Did you always write teach?
No one ever writes the one thing they get famous for. It's just a couple of different things. I had several tags, like everyone.
Yeah. What were the first initial ones that you kind of cut your chops with?
Can't really say my first one because it's literally like my name.
Nice. So Henry, we'll say Henry, yeah?
Yeah, no, I remember like I was writing Fire for a while writing it different ways, like the normal way and then F-I-A and then P-H-I-R-E, getting up, you know, like, basically just bombing. I remember one time, like, I bombed up this brand new building that hadn't been finished. And then the next day, all the work people came over to me and was asking me questions, but just asking me to kind of look out for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of felt a little bit hot that it was me. So I just thought, let me change. But that was like one of the first times.
Really? You know? Someone's doing that round here? How terrible. That kind of thing.
No, I was from a pretty mashed up estate, so.
Right, you know. Okay.
But yeah.
How old are you that time?
Secondary school times.
Okay,
you know about graph, but you don't really know about it, you know?
Yeah.
You just know of the myth of graph, or the people that obviously don't just seen their names, but you don't really know who they are.
Yeah, there is a mythology, isn't there?
Yeah,
about
but
that,
when
yeah.
you start doing it, then all of a sudden there's the little things that start to come up, like, oh, what happens when this happens? And then you go, oh, I don't know, So I just thought, just in case I get into trouble, like, so I think from then I just switched and I wrote something else.
Isn't it mad, like, the way that the mind works? It's like, when you start something, you're just like, fuck it, I'm just going to, you know, you kind of work out the mistakes, you adjust to fit, and it's just your pure tenacity that drives you to keep going. That's like some of the best creative responses you can actually have, isn't it? Just constantly doing it and just not stopping. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I see kids these days and they're doing tags and they're getting caught and they carry on doing it and everyone knows who they are and they still do it. So
yeah.
I don't know. It's whatever works for you, really.
Yeah.
The way I feel about graph is, and this is just my personal opinion, is that it's something that I don't want to be known for, you know?
In terms of your identity.
It's nothing to do with who I am. It's just what it means to me. When I see something, I don't want there to be something that goes along with it. It's just, that's what it is.
I love that.
So you see the tag, you see the piece or the dub, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how I want it to remain.
Yeah.
When I started bombing and we started doing insides and then we started to get bigger and bigger, I still would never tag in front of people. It wasn't something that I felt comfortable with.
Even crew?
No, crew's fine. Crew, but it's not that... I'm not scared that person's undercover, or I just don't want a normal person seeing me do it because I'm with people that just move people out of the way and tag.
Yeah.
And it's not part of who I am, you know?
It's not the way you like to operate.
Yeah, I mean, I like to move in silence and just kind of do my thing and disappear, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, like, sometimes it's difficult when you're painting with some people that you share something with, but you don't share the same respect for, you know, like, being quiet or not being seen or respecting the other person's feelings, you know?
Yeah.
Like, some people, when you paint, they're really noisy and they're really loud, that they don't care, and they talk really loud when you don't really need to be like that.
Does that make you jittery yourself when people operate in certain ways around you and you're like, well, I'm definitely not going to be working with these guys no more because they're fucking
hype. Mean, you know, when you first go and you're going on your own or you're going with one other person, you're both relying on each other's instincts to kind of figure out if this is if it's safe. When you start painting with other people that are like maybe known for other things, then they don't share that same thing that you have. So sometimes it makes it a bit difficult.
Mm.
And then there's like kind of like a weird vibe. There's a lot of times where there's been like heated things happening whilst we're painting.
Yeah.
And it's just the whole thing about respect and stuff. Yeah, you know. Just... I like to remain calm the whole time I'm painting. When we were younger and there was loads of us, you could see we were all frightened.
Yeah.
We're all painting with a lot of adrenaline going through.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just when you get to that point and then you're really relaxed, and that's when you feel like you're actually really getting into it, and then you're starting to paint a little bit relaxed.
Yeah. You know, is that like a level of zen? Like, would you say that was like your...
Yeah, I guess it can happen.
Be right back.
This is the sound of the Killer Keller Beatbox Body Part Sample Pack. Over 120 loops, samples, and one shots for your music production. Exclusively on Splice.
Here we go again.
I mean, this is all in retrospect because, in past tense, when I think back to me growing up and seeing your stuff in magazines and XYZ places that, you know, where you usual outlets, bro, like some of the most iconic top to bottoms on transit were from you, bro, like some of the most amazing, amazing pieces. And yeah, it's the collaborations you used to do as well, full on productions, you know what I mean? Like insane levels. Like, how old were you when at that golden era of maybe like the mid-90s?
Teens.
Bare teens, really, yeah.
Teens.
Was it a different kind of state of play back then in terms of not just collaborating with people, but like, you know, just the...
I think there was more... In them times, when you're younger, there's a lot more to prove to yourself. So you're usually doing something that's always kind of a little bit beyond what you should be doing.
Yeah.
Like now... I wouldn't bother thinking about things like that because it's like, it's a lot to kind of build up for. So whilst you're like, there's things that you've seen before, like you've seen whole cars by certain people and you've seen certain panels by certain people, certain wild styles, and those things inspire you to be like, I've got to do my kind of version of that.
Yeah.
Or, like, I can't just keep doing these dubs, because that's what I was doing for a long time. I was just doing dubs on trains and, like, a two-colour fade. And I knew that at some point I got to start doing some better things, especially if I want to start painting with people that usually don't really deserve to paint with.
What took your time in developing that? Why was there a kind of...
I think ref's really different now than when I was painting. There was not really much... There wasn't really much out there other than old school photographs. Yeah. Every, maybe, if you was lucky, every year or maybe twice a year, there was a weird zine that come out in, like, Tower Records. Mm. And it had, like, maybe half of it was black and white, and it had pictures from the 70s, a couple from the 80s, and then a couple of new pictures from the 90s. But there wasn't really much, you know? And another thing was, is that it was too bait to bite anyone, you know? Even, like, you could maybe bite a bit of a colour scheme. Or, like, yeah, the red outline with the pink 3D. But that was about it, because people would just be on you, and they'd be like, well, that's my man's piece.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you just have to either admit it or just be like, yeah, you ain't original.
Integrity is everything. You know?
And
that
so,
time,
like, now, that's gone out of the window. That don't even exist. You can do whatever you want, and it's yours.
What's your feelings on that?
That's why, like, it took me a long time. It took me, like, more than a year and a half to drop Shadow on a dub, because I didn't know how to do it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't. And then I even remember I was doing a piece with Fuel, and I knew how to prove myself, because to paint with Fuel is,
it's
like,
a highlight. Yeah.
Yeah, isn't, you can't be like you know, like, you can't be like, you know, doing some toy thing next to someone like that. And I hadn't really done Shadow before, so I started to drop my Shadow, and just on the left side, it didn't look good. I didn't feel comfortable with it, so if you look at our piece, I've got a little bit of shadow on one bit of the letter, and then I've left it. Damn. And I've got like a no smoking half car with just outline, no shadow, you know? And, but I mean, I think I raised the bar when I did that piece with him.
There was a lot of bar raising in the mid-90s, early 90s, where, I mean, you and Right, because, well, for me anyway, as for the age I am, that was, you two was a combination, was just like, that was an insane period. Again, that was your teens, right?
Yeah, we went hard together.
You went hard, and
we went hard together. I mean, I think,
how long was that for? How long was that period for?
That was for a while. The Rate Teep thing went for a while, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the one thing that we shared was the fact that it was slightly not as serious, the stuff we used to do. When I used to go and do yards and stuff,
yeah,
and it was like, okay, we're doing end-to-ends and all that. But when I used to paint with Rate, we would, like, it would be like, yeah, we're going to drop, like, around 15 dubs tonight, and then we do about 3 Rate teachers. Most of the times he'll do them, and then I'll do one, and then
15 fucking dubs? That's insane.
Yeah, but it was just,
or was that just all nighters? Was that just an all nighter? That's standard.
It's just all nighters. That's what we used to do. And there was a few people that used to do it, but not many. Like now, no one would do an all nighter and just walk tracks and just walk through 3 stations and do like at least 3-4 dubs in between each station.
Yeah.
We did that for a long time, and we used to just get jokes. We used to like buy a box of 10 cigarettes, tease each other up throughout the night. Never drank alcohol.
No alcohol, no?
Yeah, if we was lucky, we'd have had a little draw. But yeah, and then, you know, people used to come in there, and, you know, there was always jokes going on. There would always be something amusing. Never having money, bunking the train, you know, racking sandwiches in the morning. You know, waking up somewhere like Pinner or Rainer's Lane on a bench somewhere.
Oh, you know, so you'd sleep out? You'd sleep out sometimes?
Well, it's all night. We can't get home. We've got to wait for the first train.
So we'd
run out of paint. It would get light. Sometimes, I remember one time, we slept in a trackie shed. It's a famous one. It's the one that Cast had something on the Big Met. We'd find places to sleep in that.
Seems to me like that era, that time, there was this very invite-only underworld. And I remember us having a conversation about the Fabric period where there was that kind of underground area before it turned into Fabric.
Yeah.
And I brought it up with Zom as well. And you know, he was like, yeah, man, this was like the glory spot. Was this all this happening during that period or before that period?
No, this is after.
After, you know, right.
Because me and Rate was smashing the tracks, and then obviously there was the yard thing going on, but The track thing is something that we was always into because you could do so much. You go racking, you maybe go to three spots, bank the train, wherever. He'll tell you it was always South London somewhere. Like Denmark Hill, go to like all these B&Qs and shit.
Yeah.
Just racking paint, racking, racking, racking. And then we'd just plop the paint up and we'd be like, yeah, I'll meet you tonight. Going Yards was different because Yards took a while to kind of really kind of lock down in the way that happens a little, like a couple years later. Like Farringdon, there was a couple of people that knew that secret entrance, and it was basically walking down a dead tunnel, and there was a really little hole in the wall that you had to squeeze through, and once you got in there, that was it. You was in this place that, you know, was like a, you know, it was like a, I don't know, it was like a fantasy place, you know? Mm. It was like a really massive, it was, you know, it was what Fabric is to this day.
But all yours.
But the whole thing without any flaws. And the only bit that did have flaws was where they used to rack all the meat, and it was all made out of wood, and it was very close and tight, full of cobwebs. And it was, that bit was like the Indiana Jones part, where it was full of cobwebs. And the only way you would know the way to go was where the cobwebs were broken. Where the cobwebs, you flash a light, and it was just like cobwebs like that, you couldn't go that way, and you wouldn't want to anyway, because...
Jesus,
you know,
Christ.
So it was a labyrinth that you had to go through, and just go through each of the kind of wooden chambers, and I would always kind of be like you know, at the end, because I wouldn't even want any of that shit to touch me.
No,
I'd
been fucking like, petrified me.
But yeah, we did that.
Fuck that.
And it was a. I mean, that secret lasted a long time. And
be right back.
Come on, ma. Please. New dance, syringes, pata fightings. We love food, we just be hit, painting. But look, oh no, watch them burn them brain out. 30 to 50,
Killer Cala Fortified featuring Patoine. Available on all good music platforms now.
Here we go again.
How many people knew at that time? You know, when you first...
When I first went there, there was probably less than five people. I think there was about two people or three people that knew before me.
You guys must have been like, oh, we've struck gold.
And then once we found that, and then we had the door to the Little Mets, that was it. We literally owned what Fabric is now. That was basically...
Wow.
That was basically our house. Like, I had a place where I slept. We had a cupboard. I had all my belt-ons, all my auto-K, everything. I had a shelf of paint.
This is incredible.
You know? And, I mean, it was rank, you know, like, it was basically, you know, like, this kind of, it's just where they used to hang meat. So, like, you'd go...
Was there blood on the floor and shit like that?
Yeah, it was like... Just moody stuff. It was like 50 years old, the blood. So you'd, like, go around and you'd, like... It's the type of place that, you know, if you was into, like... If you were scared of horror movies, it wouldn't really be for you.
Like,
but obviously, you're there, and then you're there with like someone like Fuel or Prime, and you can't obviously start thinking about horror films.
You know
what I mean? You're just like, yeah, I'm going to do a banner with these guys.
There's nothing like the fresh smell of iron and aerosol in the morning, ladies and gentlemen. To honk in there, G. You must have had these moments of like, what am I doing here?
There was times where I was just thinking, fuck, man, this is like, you know, if I start like letting my mind take over and start thinking about, oh, when you watch those horror films and you see, what stupid idiot would just be there now?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it's me.
But
know?
I think there is an overall agenda. There's a different mission. You know, it's not like you're trying to find ghosts. You know what I mean? It's like you're there to,
I mean, other than painting, there would be no reason to be down there. It's like, it's not a nice place.
This,
you know?
To me, feels like the only place that this has been documented. I don't know anyone else that talks about this stuff, them people on this podcast. It's insane. Is there any documentation of it? Ever?
Do you know what? We took so many people down there, but because the main thing was this door that we opened, and then it was just like kind of paradise, that bit was kind of like, it's really strange. Like now, people would be all over it, taking photos of every single like angle.
Yeah.
But that was the bit that we were there for hours and hours, chilling in that bit, just waiting for the right time to open that door. And, there's a few people. I know Prime one time came with a video camera, and I don't know what happened to that tape, because I haven't even seen I haven't even seen footage of it, and I didn't even get pictures of it, but me and Prime did a top-to-bottom whole car, and it said primary teacher with Bart. Bart in the middle, Bart Simpson in the middle.
Damn.
Writing on a blackboard, I must not bomb trains, I must not bomb trains.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know?
And, oh, my God.
Yeah, and I'd love to see that. I mean, I was still probably 100% confident in my pieces and stuff, but...
That's a glory time, man. And whole type and Prime as well.
And PIC was there as well. PIC did a top to bottom, a nice top to bottom. And I think because it was like, it basically came out of the yard and it was dark in the morning, so, and it just went straight, didn't even stop. Usually it stops and you can get on it and ride it to Hammersmith.
Yeah.
Pulled in. No, it pulled in and just never, it just took off. It didn't even stop. And so PIC managed to get a picture of his top to bottom.
Yeah.
And then R1 just went past us, and then that was it. Never saw it
Damn,
again.
Damn, gutted.
Yeah.
Gutted. Yeah. Big up Prime as well. Jesus. There's, I mean, how many... So, I mean, obviously there was Rate, Fuel, right?
Yeah.
Prime. So was this the early stages of you formulating, like, because you were...
No, DDS was already established at that time.
Was it already established?
Already... there was already hardcore members in the crew.
Give me names. Who were the
hard? There was Sub Shoe, you know. There was Stax, Diet, Form, 72.
Yeah.
Then there was some older lot like Bus One and But then there was like Ray and Pace was around. Pace is someone that, you know, probably no one knows of anymore, but those were the early kind of the exciting time, you know, when it went from like kind of blitzing everything. It was like track sides, insides, and then it just started to be like fronts, backs, panels, top to bottoms, everything.
Zom cites you as being like extremely motivational and like almost incredibly ambitious when you were in the beginning. I mean, I know that hasn't changed a lot, but he does cite you as being quite an influencing force within the crew at that time. What was your take on that? When I say your take?
Yeah, well, I think that probably just came down to that most of everything kind of was... Everyone linked up at mine. And so then it was just like, what are we doing? It's like, yeah, we're going to do G. Yeah, but we did it yesterday. We're doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of them ones where it was like, it's like a double bluff. Yeah, but it's like, all right then.
Yeah,
and then
we
go there and it's safe.
Yeah,
you know? It doesn't mean if you leave it for a week or 2 weeks, it's like, you know, it's safe, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's like, if you get bagged, go out the next day and go again. Prove yourself.
Was there a lot of proving in your mind? That was a real kind of... It was, like you said, it's self-challenging, but there was a lot of proving to yourself and the collective? The competitive edge of that, like making you guys...
No, even though it might appear like that, I think we were just... What we did and how we did it was very kind of just being ourselves.
Yeah.
It wasn't like us like watching Star Wars and thinking we're Cap, you know?
Yeah, get you.
Or like we just made the opportunities. On top of making the opportunities and being around constantly, riding the lines, racking and checking, oh, there's a train laid up. You see, all of these things actually made this energy around us all that kind of protected us.
Yeah, that's fire. Yeah, that's, you know, wicked, yeah.
And that's the thing that's like, I remember when that was happening in like 93, 94, 95, 96, that mad energy around us. It was unstoppable.
Unstoppable, bro.
You know, some of us will get like caught, pinched and all of that, but as soon as they come out, it's like back in, and there was just this glow around us, you know? And
yeah, it's like an organism, wasn't it? It's like, that's the way it kind of felt. And that was just from the outside looking in. It was almost like this energy. It was an energy, and it wasn't one, it was a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It was all of us together that created that. And it was like, it was a good thing. It's something that I haven't kind of... I haven't felt that type of thing that we had. You know?
Is that youthful wisdom, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, also it's you know, also it's like kind of growing up and realizing that you can actually do your own thing in life without having to do what everyone else says that you should be doing.
Yeah.
You know, like regular things.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like creating your own freedom. It's a powerful thing.
100%. But that, yeah, that does come with age, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right, I've got a question for you. So, and it's something I haven't asked the boys. So when, what's the initiation process? Because, like, let's remember, like, after the back of all of what we're talking about here, we then had, like, Fume, Zonk, Koza, Take, and then Mood, and all these, you know, some of the legends, you know, they carried on, like you say, the organism kept on growing. Yeah. How, what's the initiation to that? Like, how, what, did they just ask to be in the crew, or was there a lot of proving, and someone had to kind of make the kind of call?
You know, like, when I got put in the crew, which I remember, you know, I remember really well. I was on the train and I was with Sub and we were sitting there. And he just says, "All right, Teach, that's it. You can start putting up DDS. And you know what? You can put whoever you want in the crew, yeah? But don't use someone. Don't, you know, put someone in that's, you know, put someone in proper." And when he said that to me, you know, I knew what he meant because I'd been in other crews. And all the other crews I've been in, once you're in the crew, the next person can just put someone in it and all that. But it's just like, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like, Sub didn't give that to many people. When he put people in, he didn't tell them, "Oh, you can put whoever you want." It wasn't a crew like that. It was like, he didn't want it. It had to be strong. Everyone had to play a role.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty tight in letting people in. You know, I started to think about who I was going to let in, and I'd watch it for a while, and then I'd tell Sub, "I'm thinking of putting him in."
So Sub was the main geezer. He was like
Sub and Shu were the main people.
Who did you put in?
Huh?
Who did you
put in?
Yeah.
Well, when I got put in, when I got put in DDS, I don't know. Maybe this is like probably a bit too private, and I shouldn't talk about it. But yeah, I put in like most near enough everyone after me. I had some involvement in that.
That's amazing.
But then having said that, there's probably about, I don't know, more than 20 people that are definitely not in DDS, but put it up. And they put it up just because, I don't even know, no one even put them in it. They just thought, because they're hanging around with us, they can put it up. But there's loads of people.
Yeah, I would imagine there was a lot
There's a lot of people that are not in it, and they still put it up today.
I don't know how I'd feel about that. I mean, even when I was in Rocksteady, I was like, I had to go to the main source. You can't just like presume, can you?
Yeah.
That's like,
I mean, another thing I have is, if you do ask, it sounds a bit horrible, but I'm just never gonna, you know, I think with graph, it's not something that you could get schooled from day one.
Yeah.
But if you ask to be in a crew, I don't know, I feel something weird about it. It's
you've got to be
you can
asked.
Never be in the crew. If you ask to be in the crew, that's it. So
you've got to be offered.
I remember I was at college and someone came up to me and went, how would you get into a crew like DDS? And I was like, you know,
I get
what
it.
What can I say?
Yeah, yeah, it's a level of respect and you have to earn it and people invite you.
I don't even think that. Because it doesn't mean you have to be a good grapher. You don't have to be like the best, but you definitely have to have the same kind of spirit as everyone else.
Yeah.
Just because, in the end, you lot are going to be together on this.
Mm.
You definitely can't have, like, no one that's going to be, like, kind of dodgy.
I get you. There's a spirit involved in it. I agree. It's the same with going on tour. There's no point in sitting there in the back of a van or a bus with a dickhead. They may not be the most technically amazing as an instrumentalist or a singer, but it's more important to get along and know the values of that person is in the right place, isn't it? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you know. It's the thing that makes you that thing different to all the other crews.
Yeah. I remember seeing you did a lot of inlay card work for Shorty Blitz and MK. I remember that was kind of my first introduction to your stuff outside of what I'd seen in the magazines. Like, I'd get these tapes and I'd be like, my guy did the artwork for
me. That wasn't really any good. I was just like, I was hanging out with, basically all of us was racking. That was just what we did, but Saturdays was a day where we always go at West End record shops, and because I had the decks and we listened to tunes at my house, I would go and I'd obviously buy the new shit and then rack the new shit, and then I'd see them guys. It's like all them guys, everyone, all them used to see them, They were there. It was just a normal thing to do, be up Soho, West End, every Saturday.
I'm sure we crossed, but I always used to go there on a Saturday.
There's loads of people that I know that's got nothing to do with Graf that's just from you know, let's say Kish Kash. It's just,
yeah, it's my G. Hold tight, Kish Kash. That's right.
But yeah. So we used to just, it would be like, all the art shops would be around Soho, the record shops, you know, food shops. And then obviously, like, there was all those, you know, there was like, you know, the garm shops, you know, like we used to take the shit off of the bells. but it was a Saturday thing, you know, like, and that was like that kind of a thing where, you know, then linking up with MK and then always going to the Hop, and there would just be like a gang of us at the Hop, and then, you know,
yeah,
you know.
That's exactly how I imagine it. I mean, there's a real vibe in my head, a romantic idea that you guys as writers would always be hanging out. There'd always be this, because very often it's very hard to kind of work out where you guys were. Like, you were into like your music and stuff, like, but I was definitely entrenched in the music. I wouldn't know where to begin in like sourcing, you know, a Graf crew out. It's a whole different thing, isn't it? It's like it kind of plays in the same world as maybe like hip hop did, but it's a very arm's length, close knit scene, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, there wasn't like, now there's like many crews that are doing different things, you know, like they're into clothing, they're into printing, they're into doing art, they're into music. It wasn't really any of that before. So, you know, that's why, like, maybe it might seem like that. Because, you know, it was just because we were always everywhere at the same time. And that was a thing that, like, a lot of the older lot kind of always used to praise us about when they used to see us together. Because you'd have someone like, say, Take, when he first came in the crew, he was so tiny. And then you had, like, you know, and then we'd just all be there. And they always used to just say, like, how, you know, like, man, what is the thing that, like, keeps you lot together, man? It's, like, it's crazy.
What was that? What is it?
I was just saying, it's the thing. It was the energy. It was because we were, like, the main thing was Graf. That was the thing, the missions and that. But it was everything else in between. It was just, like, racking food and then cooking it at my house and then, you know, like, trying different things. And we had some really hilarious times, like, doing stuff. Like, certain people were into racking healthy stuff. And we'll come around my house and there will be, like, blue-green algae in a bottle and it costs £160, right? And it's like, what the fuck is that? It's like, there's some healthy shit. Open it up, put the spoon in. Fuck that, put that in water. It's like, fuck that shit.
That's amazing.
You know, my house would be filled with stuff like that. And it's just like, no one's into that stuff,
man. That's hilarious,
bro. People would be into, like, turkey rashes. You used to have turkey rash sandwiches, man. It'd be like, someone would go up to fucking Safeways, rack turkey rashes, and, you know, like, sometimes someone won't get any, or it's just like, I'm having two pieces in mind. It's like, no, you're having
Christ.
One piece.
This is too much for me, man. This is some athleticism, like, healthy.
Yeah, but then you'd have people that'd be like, you know, there'll be people that'd be racking, costumes and shit. Costumes, masks, all that. And I'd have a big box in my house of all that shit.
It
would be like, obviously, can't really wear that, you know, painting and that, because it's like, when you put a mask on, you know, when you turn, you can't really see properly. But every now and again, there would be some, you know, there'll be some, someone will come around with a Polaroid, and then we'll just do, like, some mad shoot where we just shoot, like, 100 pictures and everyone's wearing all that shit, you know?
The ultimate DDS fancy dress.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong, can you? Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, like, where I live, as you can tell, it's like it's seen a lot of action. And the amount of things that come through the door that, like, I mean, I don't own a microwave, but I've got one. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's one of those, isn't it? I think that's the artistic mind at the same time. Would you class yourself more, or had classed yourself more, as a vandal or an artist?
Vandal.
Yeah. You're not the only one that says that. I think there's a mentality, isn't it?
I think, you know, I don't really think it needs explaining, but it's just what you're doing is vandalism, but it just might be a bit nicer than someone else, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, But it's not the point of being a vandal. It's only, you're only a vandal because what you're doing is illegal, you know. But I wouldn't say I'm going to do something artistic on the side of a train.
No, it doesn't matter.
I'm going
like
to
that.
Write my name. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
The same thing again and again.
And when you've got somewhere like the Fabric Backdoor, I guess it's to coin it what it was, to know that in a real cookie-cutter approach, you know you can go in there, handle your work, and then off it goes. And I mean, that just must have been like made-to-order awesomeness, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, things like that, it's like, as you were saying, you spoke to Rate about it, those things there, it's almost like people won't believe you when you tell them that story.
No.
It's like, when I first started, that was the thing that you kind of dreamed up in your head. Oh, imagine this, you went down a tunnel and you opened the door as a train. That's the type of shit that you used to say when you were a little toy.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of like getting up in the, you know, like really kind of control things.
Mm.
You're starting to have a really good time with your crew members. You feel like it's yours. And then all of a sudden, there's this key that only you've got. Yeah. And it's like, it's magic.
It's magic.
Yeah, it's magic. And that was a thing. Like anyone would tell you, it was like, whenever you go in a yard, you never know what's going to happen. Mm. But when we used to go Farringdon, it was like, okay, you know, obviously if there's just one or two of you, you go, right, let's do top-to-bottom haul cars. And then when there's three or four of that, it's just like, okay, we've got to do end-to-ends and all that, you know, because you still got to be quiet.
Mm.
You know, a rad could still look over the wall and then kind of hear and see you, you know.
Mm.
So when there's more than, say, three of you, that's when it's like kind of vulnerable.
Right. Having experiences that put you so in a social arena that was just like, bro, like, you've done it. You were in the thick of something that not everyone could ever be a part of. That, for me, is the bit that I'm most intrigued by. Do you get where I'm coming from? Maybe I'm overthinking.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
It's weird to say that because obviously you're saying it as like, you know, as an outsider looking in, whereas in when we had it, it was obviously like we found it, we owned it, and we deserved it.
Yeah.
So it was like our little basic touch in life. It wasn't much, but that was it. That was our touch. And we didn't abuse it.
Yeah.
You know, we took care of it, and it lasted a while.
Yeah, so you know, sick, bro, that is so it's very eloquently put.
You know,
as well.
Certain people took their time with that place, and it was good. It did get ruined, and there were certain people that was upset about it. But that's what happens when too many people get involved. One too many people get invited, and you know, it gets to the point as well when you start getting older and older.
Yeah.
You don't want to keep having to moan at people about things.
Yeah, people start talking about Fight Club after a while, don't they? Do you know what I mean? It's like one of those ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think, and it sounds like a complicated question, but I think you probably have the key to it. Do you feel like you were propelled into being a product of your environment in terms of being a writer in that lifestyle? Or do you feel like there was a bit of tussling in your head, like with the desire to want to do it, not entirely being from the background, but you wanted to embody it, and if it took to get to XYZ, then that's what you did.
Yeah, so that's the thing with the
whole thing. I gotcha.
The whole thing about graph.
Yeah,
is, I've said this before, when I first started to see it at a young age, I didn't like it. A lot of people, when they saw it at a young age, is what they got them into it.
Mm.
I didn't actually like it. Because
yeah.
I just moved into an estate and it was brand new. And I just knew, because I came from South London to then West London. And then when I came there, I just knew it's not going to take long before this place is covered in graff. I just knew it.
Mm.
And it was only because I was in like a new estate. I mean, I've always lived in estates.
Mm.
And well, you know what they're like, the type of things that you hear and the things that you see and that.
Yeah.
And so I remembered when I saw it, when I got into it personally, it wasn't like I thought that far ahead.
Yeah.
It was something that once I decided that was what I was going to do was probably around the time when I got caught for the first time. I kind of could, because that would be like the thing was like, oh, well, I'm not going to do this again. But when I got caught, it was just like, wow, I got to I gotta be more smart about this.
That's amazing. You know? That was your response. That
and that was when I was just like, right, who's painted the most trains? Him. Okay, that's the first thing I have to get out of the way. I have to paint more than that person. And that was the thing that was always on my mind. I didn't really talk to anyone about it. I was shit. I wasn't good, but I just had to make sure I went past 300 tubes, you know?
Damn.
And that was like one of the first kind of motivations I had for myself, you know? And, you know, so painting was something that just, it was a continuation of something that got bigger and bigger. There was loads of aspects of graph that I hadn't even experienced at that point, and that was things like serious beef with people and old school and some rules that you're not aware about, you know. So
do you feel like you learned the hard way through that? I mean, can you avoid making those kind of beefy-esque mistakes?
Everyone makes mistakes. You just have to go through it. Yeah. You know? It's good though. It's healthy.
Yeah. It's like the prospect, isn't it? It's like you've got to kind of you've got to know that.
You have to put yourself in a situation, and you have to get out of it. Yeah. You know? So how you deal with it is the thing that makes you kind of either makes you stronger or everyone will remember what happened.
Well, I mean, I guess this isn't entirely for you to say, and it certainly ain't for anyone to kind of proclaim outside of you, so I guess you're the best person to ask. What period would you actually say I kinged that era? What period?
Oh, it was mid-90s.
Mid-90s?
Yeah. Say 93, I started to really kind of get confident a bit. I kind of felt that I wasn't a toy anymore.
Yeah.
But then things started to, you know, like painting in a train yard in, like, say, 10, 15 minutes, my flow started to be, like... Because that's the thing. In between all these pieces, you still do shit pieces. You still do things, and it's just like, fuck. Your paint came out shit on the outline, and there's nothing you can do about it, so your piece looks shit.
Yeah, I feel that.
And all those things would still continue to happen. But, you know, there was times where you were just painting because that was what you set yourself to do, and then all of a sudden it just went, the whole mission was smooth.
Mm.
And there was times when I did stuff and there was just two of us, or there was just three of us, and it was like a quite tight operation. There's certain things about it. You can even remember, you know, like how the paint was coming out and sticking to the train. And then, you know, certain nozzles, you know, certain nozzles would just be the luxury of that mission.
I get that. I feel that. It's the same with gigs, man. If you have a shit gig, I'm like, screwing. I'm like, I've got to get on stage and do that again because I'm so pissed off with myself that XYZ went wrong or the mic wasn't right and stuff. All those little things do play on your mind. So I'd imagine that's very much a similar sort of vibe, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whenever I used to come off tour, I would almost certainly say that the feeling of coming back home to London was to see like a Teach tag. for real. Yeah. So I've got to give you love,
man,
because if it wasn't for that, to know it was home sweet home was to see a tag of yours.
Funny you say that. My friend used to come to London all the time, and then he was like, after the Olympics and they buffed everything, where the fuck's all your shit gone? And I was just like, mate, don't ask. You know what I mean?
I've got a whole season to do now. I've got to get back out there. They've just made my life a whole lot busier. Well, ladies and gentlemen, look, we're going to leave it there for now because we could go into part two, part three for the rest of the day. But I know you are a mad busy, busy man. Listen, thank you so much for passing through, brother.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, always got time for you. Tea's always in the pot, yeah?
All
right, nice. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to subscribe on this, all right? It's the Graph Specials, and we always keep it unique every time. Teach DDS. Hold tight. Stay lucky, people. Don't talk to any strange women. Peace.